I don't know about you, but now that it's warming up, my schedule is packed, and having a great story to keep me company really takes the stress out of it. That's why I subscribe to Audible. As a member, you can choose one title to keep every month from their entire catalog, plus the latest bestsellers and new releases. I'm about halfway through The Wolf in the White Van by John Darnielle. It is a gorgeously written thriller with a time travel plot unlike any I've ever come across. I can't wait to hear how it ends, and you can check it out with me. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Just visit audible.com/WWHL or text WWHL to 500-500. That's audible.com/WWHL or text WWHL to 500-500.
When it comes to hiring, don't go searching for the one. Just meet your match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome to the Bravo Clubhouse for the podcast edition of Watch What Happens Live with me, Andy Cohen.
His daytime show used to cure your blahs, and as that girl, she ditched bras. It's Watch What Happens Live at Home with Phil Donahue and Marlo Thomas now.
Andy Cohen's got the 411, king of midnight fun, MCAC, on Bravo TV.
Hey everybody, welcome to Watch What Happens Live at Home from the Hamptons. I'm Andy Cohen, joined by two legends who have both stolen the TV spotlight, but one has plenty of experience passing the mic. Their book, What Makes a Marriage Last, 40 Celebrated Couples Share With Us the Secrets to a Happy Life, is out now. It's Phil Donahue and Marlo Thomas. Hi, you two.
Hey,
hi.
That's us.
Wow.
Great to see you. By the way, speaking of gorgeous million-dollar listings, your New York City apartment looks rather swanky.
Pretty, huh? Yeah.
Come Very on. Very nice. Ring How long have you lived there?
We've lived here 35 years.
Wow.
Mm. Yep.
So how does a couple make the journey from connecting on Donahue and falling in love to connecting on Wi-Fi and appearing on this show 40 years later? I want to connect the dots by discussing a few of your firsts, both before and during your relationship with love at first sight. So right. In your relationship, who was the first person to say, I love you?
I was.
Yeah, Phil was. And Phil was so funny about it, because Phil is not a very demonstrative person. So we were walking down the street in Winnetka near his house, and he says to me, I've got a card I want to play. I said, okay, what is it? He said, I love you. I said, that's a card? So for him, that was so hard for him to get that out.
So. I love it. Marlo, describe your first kiss.
Oh, wow. Well, it was good. I know that.
How'd we get involved in this?
I know. He came to see me in Denver. I had done his show. I was on a tour for a movie, and my next city was Denver. And he called me to take me to dinner, and I said, well, I'm in Denver. Is Chicago very far from Denver? You know? And he said, oh, no, it's not far at all. So he came to have dinner with me, and he kissed me goodnight, and it was... I thought, okay, this is actually going to work. This is really going to work.
Wow.
You know, from the first kiss.
Marlo, speaking of first, who was the first famous guy that hit on you who you turned down?
Oh, Andy, I don't do that. I'm sorry.
Phil, what do you remember about the first taping of the Phil Donahue show?
That was The Atheist, Most Hated Woman in America, Madeline Murray O'Hair, who was part of the effort to remove the official reading of prayer in public schools.
Wow.
There I was actually talking to her. And of course, this was Dayton, Ohio. and the roof fell in on me and everybody associated with the program. But we had a hell of a rating.
Yeah, I bet you did. Well, for both of you, who's usually the first to apologize after a disagreement?
Who do you think?
I think Marlo is.
There, I win.
Marlo, your role of that girl made you the it girl of the 60s and 70s, so you'll understand that I have to fangirl and ask for all of the stories from that era, okay? So in 1967, you won your first Golden Globe for lead actress in That Girl. Dean Martin won Best Lead Actor for The Dean Martin Show.
Right.
You must have interacted with Dean Martin. Was it true that he was never really toasted? It was all an act?
Well, he wasn't drunk that night, but he did drink pretty well. Do you know who presented me with my Golden Globe?
Who?
John Wayne and Lassie.
Wow.
Can you imagine Lassie? It was fun.
That's incredible. Wow.
Yeah, yeah. Dean Martin was a good friend of my dad's, and I just thought he was adorable. The thing that was great about Dean Martin is, he, of all those guys, he was the most laid back, the most cool of them. Really cool.
What was your favorite or most eccentric memory of co-starring with Orson Welles in the ABC special It Happened One Christmas?
Well, I had no idea that he was going to have cue cards. So I see this guy, Charlie, who used to do the cue cards on my dad's variety shows and Bob Hope's variety shows, where it's fine to have cue cards, but we had very dramatic scenes. And I see Charlie and I say, "What are you doing here?" And he said, "I do Orson's cards." I thought, "Oh my God, I'd never worked with anybody with cue cards in my life." But there he was, and you could never tell the way he looked down like that. You could see the cards. I mean, it didn't bother him, but it really threw me to know that somebody behind me was flipping these things.
That's funny. What was the most misogynistic note you got from a network executive while making That Girl?
Oh, my goodness. I guess that mostly that they treated me, you know, they call me hun. Oh, this is something technical, hun. You know, and like I didn't know things. And, you know, I grew up on a television set, Sage. You know, I used to be a gopher when I was in my teens from my dad. My sister and brother and I all ran film back and forth in those days. And so I was very conversant with what was going on. But they treated me a little bit like I didn't know stuff. But once they saw me produce my own show, you know, I didn't get that anymore.
By the way, when you look back on your unbelievable childhood and the people that came through your house, is there one person now that you look back on and say, huh, that was really something that was going on in my living room?
The person I love the most from my childhood is George Burns. Wow. He was just adorable, and my father did not want me to be an actress. And George would always say to him, would always, you know, take my side in that argument since I was like 13. And I remember one time he said to my father, "Well, what do you want her to be, a milliner?" Like, there was only two things in the world, a milliner or an actress.
Right. That's amazing.
I know.
Well, Phil, back in the day on Donahue, you were never scared to ask your guests the hard-hitting questions, so I know you'll appreciate a few more. I have questions for you about your show. You know, in 1987, you had Donald Trump on the show, and we watched the clips, and you were quite challenging to him, and you challenged his penchant for name-calling. And you said to him, "The book on you is that you throw little old ladies who can't afford their rent out of the apartment." How pissed was he behind the scenes after that interview? Do you remember?
I remember him walking out of the studio without saying goodbye to the audience. But I thought he was a hot dog. Yeah, he exaggerated everything, really.
He said, "I've sold 200,000 books," and Phil said, "I think it says 150,000. He says, "Oh, yeah, maybe it's 150,000. And Phil said to him, "You kind of exaggerate a little bit, don't you, Donald?" I mean, he caught him, you know, on it.
You did a great interview with Muhammad Ali back in 1977. You called him the whole ball game. Were you surprised by how playful and funny and incredibly charming he was during your interview? He just is gorgeous to look at.
I have come to think of Muhammad Ali as my most favorite guest. Wow. I mean, a woman in Chicago in the front row, I'll never forget this. Why are you always throwing your blackness at us? He said, I'm not throwing my blackness at you. Why are you throwing your blackness? I'm not throwing my black. He said, take that white Jesus off the wall. I know a lot of Miss Americas who are prettier than, black Miss Americas who are prettier than your Miss America. And how come angel food cake is white and devil's food cake is black? I mean, this woman was back on her chair. She couldn't breathe when he got through with her.
Tarzan.
Yeah. You made Tarzan white. You know, I never thought about that. Why right. was Jack Weismiller, you know, the king of the jungle? Hello. And I remember feeling very kind of stupid for never having thought, been aware of that. That's just one moment with Muhammad Ali. He was something.
You had Johnny Carson on your show back in 1970. And, you know, you talked a lot to him about the art of the interview. And he was kind of a notoriously kind of, he could be a tough interview. What is your most memorably tough interview?
Tough. Well, I've interviewed people who were stoned. And, you know, you ask a 4-minute question and the guest says, yes.
Right.
You know, you're, I'm hesitant to, you know, to mention somebody who was not altogether up to par.
Yeah.
Because they're not here to defend themselves.
Yeah.
So let's just say that not everybody hit a grand slam.
Yes.
On every question.
Yeah. Marlo, on that girl, your character struggled as an actress, but she never had trouble throwing together a bold ensemble. We're going to play a game of Versace or Hibachi, that girl edition. I'm going to show you outfits from Anne Marie's wardrobe. Tell us if each look is still fire, which makes it Versace, or if you'd rather set it on fire, making it Hibachi. Okay, so what about this? Versace or Hibachi serving sweet roller girl in skates and pantyhose?
Hibachi.
Hibachi. Okay. What about this one? Fashionable handmade in all red with furry sunglasses.
Love it.
Love it. I love it too. Okay, what about all business in a mustard suit with oversized necktie?
Oh, yeah. Versace.
Versace. Okay, yeah. What about this swinging 60s London look in all plaid?
Adorable. Versace.
Adorable. I agree. Here you are in a statement YSL scarf.
Yeah, that's nice.
Chic.
Yeah, very chic.
Okay, here's lots of statement jewelry on one dress. I can't imagine how much this weighed, Marlo.
I know. It actually was, that was the dress. It was
That was the dress.
Right.
You're going to keep it, aren't you?
Yeah. I should have kept it. Versace.
Okay, here you are giving us yellow feathers and leopard eleganza.
No, I think that's a Hibachi. You can
have
that.
That's a Hibachi.
One.
Okay. Yeah. One more. We've got purple bell bottoms.
I remember that. That was a commercial. No, that's a Hibachi.
That's a Hibachi. Thank you very much for playing. Now, Phil and Marlo, tonight's trip down pop culture memory lane is about to take a detour with a little pop quiz. I look at the two of you and I look at your unbelievable lives and unbelievable careers. So I want to play a round of Have You Met Them? I'm going to run through celebrities you must have encountered and I want to know if you've met them and what they were like. Did either of you meet Princess Diana?
We did.
Yeah.
And?
And I danced with her.
Really? Yeah. Where, yeah. Phil?
Yeah. Oh, I had to fight off all the guys who wanted to cut in.
He had the first dance at a gala we went to in Chicago. And it was funny because they called us ahead of time. And so we were going to this gala. I was actually speaking at the luncheon and the afternoon for her. Anyway, they said, we need somebody to, need a man to dance with Princess Diana, and there are three rules. A, he has to be married. B, she has to be in the room.
The wife
has to be in the room. And C, he has to be at least 6 feet tall. And so we'd like Phil to be that person. So I said, told that to Phil. He says, oh, I don't want to do that. Because Phil's very shy. You know, people don't realize that.
But I love it that he said, I don't want to do it.
He did, though. It's a, he had the first dance with Princess Diana at the party. And they got along great. They were chatting away while they were dancing. I was very impressed.
I wish you did. If I'd have known you were going to ask, I'd bring you picture.
We have a photo of
it. Wow, I bet you do. Okay, have you met any popes?
Yes, we met Pope John Paul II.
Yes.
Yeah, I did.
Good guy?
Well, he's we didn't really hang out and have a beer.
A hard time.
We didn't have a beer or anything, but he was lovely and charming and took my hand and two of his hands and was very, very dear.
Have you met a Kardashian?
Yes, you know, I met Kim Kardashian. Sandy Gallen, who I'm sure you knew.
My dear friend.
Gave a party for me when I was doing Clever Little Lies in East Hampton. He gave this big party, and Kim Kardashian was there. Well, you know, Sandy, he didn't just invite my friends. He invited his friends.
Everybody, and, yes.
And she came up to me and said, oh, I've always admired you. And I said, really? Well, thank you so much. I never met
her. You know what I'm now remembering? I was at that party. I can't believe but I was. I actually was.
She was there, right?
Weren't you doing, you were doing theater out here, right?
I was doing Clever Little Lies at Guildhall, yes.
Yes, okay. Yeah. Did you meet, you must have met Andy Warhol, both of you.
No, I didn't.
No.
Did you? No.
Wow. What about Marlon Brando?
No.
Mm-mm. No.
Have either of you met Justin Bieber?
No.
Mm-mm. Have you met a dictator? I bet Phil's met a dictator.
Yeah, I met a couple.
It doesn't count me, honey.
No. I met Daniel Ortega. Yeah.
Did you ever meet Marilyn Monroe?
I did.
You
did? I met her at the 20th Century Fox lot. I was under contract at 19 in a student program that Sandy Meisner was doing, and she was there, and she was so pretty. I really, as beautiful as she looked on the screen, she was so much prettier in person. I remember her very well. She had on a yellow Angora sweater, and she just looked like a doll.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Phil, Cindy Dryden, too, wants to know if you watched That Girl before you met Marlo.
Oh, yes. I better have.
No, you did not watch That Girl.
But I did.
That Girl before you met me?
Sure.
You did?
Well, the episode with when your finger was caught in the bowling ball.
My foot was caught.
Oh, your foot.
You never watched that.
I got a wonderful
You
memory.
Never watched that.
Marlo, Jamie P. wants to know, after all these years, why did you decide to do the very first cover of Free to Be You and Me with Sarah Bareilles?
You know, it just was such a right time. This country, you know, none of us are free right now. And the idea that there's a land where the children are free. In fact, we changed the lyric from children are free to people are free. Because with this pandemic, none of us are free. And then what's also going on in the country with so much racial unrest. And that's, you know, was it Martin Luther King who said, if one of us is not free, then none of us are free. So it just felt like the right time to do a song about being free and having a land where the horses are free and the people are free. And Sarah is just perfect. I mean, she sings so beautifully. And the money from the song is going to the NAACP Legal Defense Fund, which makes it even richer, the whole event richer.
That's great. We got a question from Fran S. on Facebook. How did you two become so close with Judge Judy and her husband? And who pays when you go out?
Oh, well, I don't know that we're that close to Judge Judy. We interview them for our book. And they're adorable. They're really a lot
and
of
so
fun.
So is their house, right?
Yeah, and their house is fantastic. But they've been married twice. They got married and they got divorced after 15 years. And they missed each other so much that they got married again about a year and a half later. I think that's so romantic.
Oh, I love it. Since it's Bastille Day, I want to offer a moment of mazel to help you celebrate with the perfect midnight snack. I give you instructions on how to make eggs a la Francaise with Countess Luann.
Happy Bastille Day, everybody. Welcome to my kitchen. I'm going to be making a little eggs a la Francaise for you really quick. So you got your scrambled eggs. I just have a couple in here for myself. Little salt and pepper, really super simple. Then we're gonna put them in a saucepan. Never use a frying pan. That's the secret to making a good, soft, fluffy eggs a la Francaise. We're gonna cook them on very low. The secret also is a lot of butter at the bottom of the saucepan. And the key is to stir them constantly so they're very fluffy. They're almost like a mashed potato. This recipe was made famous by our trip to the Turks and Caicos. Be cool and don't be like all uncle. So these are now nice and soft, just like I like them. You can add a little marinara sauce, but my favorite is truffle oil. Buon appetito.
Thank you, Luann. We needed that. Happy and safe Bastille Day, everyone. I want to thank Phil and Marlo for being here. Get their book, everybody. Tomorrow night, Erica Jane and Dakota Fanning at 10 after Beverly Hills. Watch our after show on Twitter Live right now.
If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of the hunt. But are you getting the thrill of the best deals? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores, like Urban Outfitters, Fenty Beauty, and Expedia. And even stack sales on top of cash back. It's easy to use, and you get your cash back through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/Wondery. Code Wondery.
Hey, everybody. It's Andy. It's the After Show with Phil Donahue and Marlo Thomas. The book is called What Makes a Marriage Last? 40 celebrated couples share with us the secrets to a happy life, available now. Is there one main lesson that you two have learned either in your own marriage or through talking to these 40 couples, like the one thing that seems to be the commonality in making relationships last?
I think it's that you really want it to last. These couples, they've all been married from 70 years to 18 years, and the one theme is they wanted it to last. They went to marriage counseling, they went to retreats, they go on holiday alone together, they found ways to stay connected. That kind of surprised us, that stick-to-itiveness for the marriage. And Kira Sedgwick said it really beautifully in just one line. She said, when you get married, there's no plan B. And when you have that feeling, no matter all the challenges that happen in life and in marriage, if none of these couples were looking for the escape route, they were looking forward together. And that really was impressive. And we didn't realize that when we went out. You know, we interviewed every couple, just the two of us, with a little tape recorder in person, every single couple. So it was just two of us talking to another husband and wife. It was very intimate and personal, and that's why the stories are so rich.
Marlo, Tom B. wants to know if it's true you turned down the lead role in Rosemary's Baby.
And I did.
You did?
So stupid. Well, I didn't read. I read the book, and the guy who was producing it, Bill Castle, had made all horror movies.
Okay.
And he said to me, and I thought, oh, God, you know, she gets impregnated by the devil. And it felt ridiculous. I didn't know that Roman Polanski was going to direct it and it was going to turn into this big hit. But yep, I turned it down from the book.
Oh, my gosh. Phil, I remember your interviews when Mommy Dearest came out. You had Christina Crawford on your show. You had her on a few times, I feel like. What was your, you also had Bette Davis's daughter on your show after her book came out. And I remember you had Bette Davis on your show several times, and she was always incredible on the Donahue show. What was your take of Christ? I went on a little tangent there, but what was your take on Christina Crawford when she came on?
Well, she was really a huge object of curiosity. And she was very honest about her own behavior and how her husband and her family responded to it. And I think she opened the door for a lot of other people to say what they really meant rather than do the Chamber of Commerce speech.
Yeah.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Up until that time, I mean, I grew up in Hollywood, so I know that up until that time, everything was so glossed over. You know, everything was in the closet, everything, no matter what. Your sexual preference, who you were in love with, what you were like as a person. You know, nobody knew anything about anything real. Everything right. was a photo op.
Right. Well, Marlo, by the way, when you were growing up, had you heard about what was going on in the Crawford House? Was that stuff that people whispered about?
No, I didn't know about that.
No. Marlo, Heather I wants to know what you think about the new show, Mrs. America. You were on the ground fighting for ERA at the time. Did you watch it?
I watched the first two, and I saw somebody was playing Phil. I've never seen that before. It was okay. I was not a fan, obviously, of Phyllis Schlafly. And Kate Blanchett is such a wonderful actress that she made her warmer and kinder. She was not warm or kind.
Phyllis Schlafly was annoying, I'm sure. Phil, I'm sure you had Phyllis Schlafly on your show. What was the key for you of having people on your show who you just, you were, I mean, you're a huge feminist. So when you have someone like her on your show, how did you approach that?
Well, that's what my wife wanted to know.
Right.
I featured Phyllis Schlafly.
You also
at a time when the ERA,
the week of the vote.
Right.
I was in New York and he was in Chicago, and I called him, and Bella Abzug called and said, "Do you know that Phil has Phyllis Schlafly on the week of the vote in Illinois?" And we really needed Illinois for the ERA. We had Illinois, Georgia, and Florida. We needed just one of them. So I called him up and I said, "How could you put Phyllis Schlafly on the week of the vote in Illinois?" And he said, "If you don't know why I have to put Phyllis Schlafly on the week of the vote in Illinois, then you don't know what I do." Ooh. And wow. And it was a great lesson for me and good for us to know, you know, that he was doing a show about news. He was not doing, you know, a show with a band and a piano and all that. He was every week. He had one guest, and he would do Nelson Mandela and Daniel Ortega and Muhammad Ali and Phyllis Schlafly and all these people. So he was a journalist, and that really taught me a lesson, and it was a wonderful lesson to learn. It gave me such respect for him, and it also saved me from everybody who called me and wanted to be on his show. I thought, you know what? I don't book his show.
Tell him the story about your dad.
Yeah, sure.
I was about to feature
Katie Kelly,
who had written this book about Sinatra.
Yes.
And I remember saying on the air, I said, "If all this is true, then Frank Sinatra is mentally ill." I said that on the air. But what I didn't know is before the show, Frank Sinatra called her father.
My father.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And said, "Hey, you know, Danny, your son-in-law is blah, blah, blah." And Danny did not flinch. He never called me, never said a word. I mean, I was so...
And they were best friends, Frank Sinatra.
We lived next door.
Yeah, they lived next door to us in Palm Springs when we were children. And in fact, my father is Frankie Jr.'s godfather. So the families were very close. So for Frank to call my father and say, you know, "You got to get your son-in-law not to, you know, can't interview Katie Kelly, who's written this horrible book on me. And my dad never mentioned it to us until after the show was done. And then he
didn't move. He never called me. He did say, oh, Frank, he doesn't book the show. All you know, all the producers do that. He doesn't. That's the most he did, you know, at least to cover me in this tragedy. Wow. But I will never, ever forget his support of my freedom to book the show without
pressure. He'd have done it anyway, that's for sure. You put on Phyllis Schlafly, you put on Frank
Sinatra. Yeah, right. Phil, who was your favorite president or first lady to have on the show?
I liked Nancy Reagan.
Uh-huh.
She was a real good kid. I remember when I went into the green room, I said, "Hiya, gorgeous." And she said, "Oh." And I remember how bashful she was. And I don't think she was putting on airs.
Uh-huh.
She was, you know, she was sincerely saying, "Oh, I'm not gorgeous." You know,
I mean, she was a little scared, you said, too. She was a little bold.
She was nervous, you know. but somehow we both survived the hour. And she was a good guest, very good guest.
Wow. Do you miss it ever, Phil?
Oh, sure. I mean, you can't do set. How many did I do? 4,000?
6,000
shows.
Wow.
27 years.
29 years.
29 years. Well, thank you. Ask like, me anything.
This is like that song about, "Not about you getting old, not you, you know."
Yeah.
"You, I was wearing blue, no, I was wearing green."
Right.
Yeah.
Wow.
And
go ahead.
So you do miss it. Well, that makes sense. Marlo, before I wrap out, I just have to ask, talk to me about the experience of being awarded the Presidential Medal of Freedom from President Obama. What was that day like for you?
It was amazing. It was out of this world. You know, when you're, well, who you are and who we are, there are certain things you aspire to in your life. You know, someday maybe I'll have a successful show. Maybe someday I'll win an Emmy or a Tony or an Oscar or something. Those are the things you think of in your life. You don't grow up thinking maybe someday I'll win the Presidential Medal of Freedom. It's so out of your mind that when Valerie Jarrett called me to say that the president wanted to award me this medal, I was flabbergasted.
Wow.
And the day I went and the day it happened, the thing I thought of were my grandparents. My grandparents came from Lebanon as immigrants with nothing. They had their belongings in cloth sacks. And I didn't know I was going to think of them. And it makes me cry to think of it again. But I was standing there. And as President Obama was putting the medal around me, I thought, my God, in just two generations, wow, wouldn't my grandparents be flabbergasted that their granddaughter, you know, they came in cloth sacks and their granddaughter's having a medal put around her neck by the President of the United States. It really got to me so strongly.
That's great. All right, I'm going to leave it there. I'm also going to thank you, Phil, for all of the years and years of advocacy you did for the gay community on your show. That was, as a gay kid in St. Louis, growing up watching it, it meant the world to me, and I'm sure millions of other people. It was a really, really big deal what you did. So thank you both. The book is called What Makes a Marriage Last? 40 Celebrated Couples Share With Us the Secrets to a Happy Life. It's available now. If you're looking for a great charity, please give to St. Jude's.
Excellent
work by Marlo for her life with her family. For more, click around bravotv.com. Thanks for listening to the podcast, everybody. Hope you enjoyed the show. Remember, new episodes go live Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time. Make sure you're subscribed. Have a great rest of your night.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Business can mean a lot of things. For some, it's earning reports, the top MBA program, investments, but business isn't everything we do. Side hustles that explode into the next billion-dollar company.
I need to create my own product that I control what the marketing is for.
Unconventional ideas that change the world we live in.
AI is everywhere, with venture capital pouring in.
From Elon Musk,
he took a massive axe and swung it through Twitter's workforce.
To Taylor Swift,
she is unstoppable as her Eras Tour stimulated local economy.
Your favorite coffee shop down the street to the vacation house you rented last weekend. Whatever business means to you, Wondery is the destination for business podcasts. Listen to top business shows like How I Built This, Business Wars, The Best One Yet, Business Movers, and many more. Everything from top daily news.
There was more ranch dressing sold last year than ketchup and barbecue sauce.
We're buying the dip, literally.
To deep dives on the biggest successes and failures of our time.
20,000 people lost their jobs.
Wondery means business.